On the Canadian side, there's a even though the agreement is far from good, it's not devastating, and so it's we're better off having an average deal than no deal.
That is Alex Matarisian from Hatley Strategies in Montreal. Now that the new NAFTA is agreed upon, the big question is whether U.S. companies need to rethink their approach to selling in Canada, and for that matter, everywhere outside the U.S. Up next on the Rethinking Everything podcast, our Montreal-based colleague shares the strategies and advice that they are giving to American brands in a post-NAFTA, pre-USMCA world. Everybody, Pat Mylan here, and welcome to the Rethinking Everything podcast from Toonheim. Well, the fourth quarter of 2018 is kicked off with a bang. The North American Free Trade Agreement appears to be fading away, and a new agreement, USMCA, is standing by to take its place. The future of free trade between Mexico, the U.S., and Canada was threatened by a 25% tariff that President Trump put on steel and aluminum. That tariff, by the way, it still exists in the New Deal, which for the most part delivers new provisions on autos and dairy, and it appears to make most Americans pretty happy. The consulting team here at Toonheim found ourselves thinking about how the proposed trade agreement should cause U.S. executives to rethink the way they approach the Canadian marketplace. Today, we're reaching across the border to the north, and we're getting some tariff-free advice from Alex Matarisian from our network partner office in Montreal.
So we're based here at Hatley in Montreal, which is Canada's second largest city, almost 4 million people. And it's the cultural hub of the country. It's also a hub for artificial intelligence and also a hub for anything that has to do with aerospace. So Bombardier is headquartered in Montreal. And so we advise many American businesses who come to do business in Canada and in Quebec specifically, which is also the second largest province in the country.
How much more complicated has it become to advise American businesses through this tariff/trade war, particularly all the talk of it?
It's been an interesting time, I would say. But what's great right now, and now with the signing of the accord, has really eliminated any form of worries. But investors and leaders, business leaders, have been confident throughout this entire process. They held the fort. They were not afraid. They continued with their investments in Canada, even though there was some uncertainty. And those dividends now are paying off with the signing, or at least for now, the tentative signing of the new agreement.
So that last-minute deal to replace NAFTA, which now is called USMCA, it really brought Canada back into the fold with the U.S. and Mexico. But the funny part is all of this started with a 25% tariff on steel and aluminum, and that hasn't gone away.
Yes, and that is still a remaining problem. It's important to understand that Quebec is the largest producer in North America of aluminum. And the vast majority of the aluminum that Americans consume actually comes from where we live here in Quebec, in the north of the northern part of the province. And Alcoa, which is an American company, Alouette, Rio Tinto, all have mega plants that produce all the aluminum that you're pretty much consuming in the United States. And so having these tariffs is actually, on aluminum especially, is hurting the economy here. It's hurting small businesses, but also the large companies as well. And it's also increasing prices for American businesses. So yes, the overall, even though Canada and most of the clients that we advise are in the manufacturing space, steel, which is in Ontario, the province of Ontario is a big producer of steel, and aluminum, where we're the largest producers, they are still hurting and are being affected by these negative tariffs on their exports.
So as we kind of tiptoe our way through this new agreement, and it still has to be approved by both sets of government, even though the leaders have signed a deal, what is your advice to the American companies? What are you telling them through this period now as they navigate it? And I'm sure they feel certain it'll get passed, but what's your advice to them?
My advice is that common sense usually prevails. And if you make sound business decisions, then and you stick to them and you have a long-term perspective, then you will succeed no matter what the situation. However, I would nuance that with regards to anything that has to do with dairy.
Coast to coast. So if we want to truly differentiate the Canadian dairy sector, our logos need to change. We need to work with processors of all sizes and retailers in order to help Canadians easily identify dairy products made with Canadian milk. That's why we set out to create a new logo that will cover both 100% Canadian milk and products, as well as our organization. The new logo needs to be consistent with our new brand conviction. We are Dairy Farmers of Canada.
As the tariff fight was looming and NAFTA was threatened, Canada's dairy farmers made a bold strategic move. They took advantage of a crisis to pull together and create a unified industry brand to drive Canadians to buy 100% Canadian dairy.
The dairy sector, I mean, that's a huge one. The U.S. exported something like $630 million worth of milk, cheese, and dairy products to Canada in 2017. And what I'm hearing from you is that the dairy producers in Canada used this crisis, if we call it a crisis, and they got pretty smart on the branding side.
Yeah, exactly. So I would say over the years, well, first of all, Canada has very strict rules on milk production, not only on what we call supply management. So they actually pretty much control the prices of dairy products. Dairy products are much more expensive in Canada versus the United States. But they also have very strict rules on the use of hormones. And so with all the documentaries that have been produced over the years, the dairy producers in Canada have been able to brand their products as higher quality and have often put logos on their products to differentiate them from any incoming products from the European Union. It's important to remember that Canada signed a free trade agreement with the European Union, and as part of that agreement, opened up certain parts of the dairy industry, especially around cheese imports. So that was the first opening of the market. And now with the most recent accord, anywhere between 3-4% of the market will be opened up as well to the U.S. Imports coming into Canada. And so the dairy industry has repositioned itself as saying Canada has the best quality milk products in the world, and have branded them as such, and have branded foreign products coming in as being inferior. And so as part of that whole campaign, they've actually had a lot of success, and consumers now are identifying and are buying Canadian-made products over any other product, even though prices are higher for those specific products.
So just for the sake of an argument, let's pretend I'm a dairy producer from the U.S. and I've walked into your office. What do I need to do to protect or grow my market share in Canada? What's your advice?
Canadians are willing, and especially Quebecers, but Canadians are willing to pay a bit more for higher quality products. We are a developed country. We have a high standard of living. We're willing to pay a little bit more to have top quality. And you're seeing that amongst the younger generation, of course. A lot of people like talking about millennials. But when it comes to quality dairy products and food products, they're willing to pay a premium for that, especially today. And so if you're an American company trying to come here in the dairy space more broadly, not just milk, but the dairy space more broadly, you need to put forward why your products are top quality, to be upfront about the use of hormones in your products, and if you do use hormones, and to be transparent with consumers here. And if you do that, you'll have a chance of piercing the market.
Is it the same advice for the EU brands that are coming in?
The EU is a bit different because the Europeans have very high standards, especially the DOP, what we call DOP, so protected regions. They have very, very high standards and are often coming in at a higher price point. And so you're dealing with a completely different set of products. So it's usually higher end products that have very high standards. And so it's not the same dynamic. If you're coming in with a niche product that is very high end, that is top quality, you will have success. If you're coming in with a mid-level or low-level product, then you're going to have to protect yourself and you're going to have to be smart about what you're selling to the consumer. And consumers, especially today in the food space more broadly, most companies already know this, but they are taking more and more time to figure out what they're actually consuming. And in the dairy space, that's really the case. So you have to be careful about how you brand your products. What are you, a higher-end product, similar to what the Europeans are bringing in here? Are you a lower end product? And you have to adjust yourself to what the consumers want here.
So I was looking through the list. Canada slapped $12 billion in tariffs on U.S. brands. That was a response to Trump putting the tariff on steel and aluminum. And you look through the list, I mean, it's yogurt, coffee, maple syrup. I'm surprised Canadians want maple syrup from the U.S. I mean, you do have the maple leaves up there, right? Pizza. Pizza. Whiskey, boats. And here's my favorite one, playing cards. There was a tariff on playing cards. Two questions for you, though, when I take a look at that list. Which brands do you think are really revered from the U.S. and Canada? And has the luster on for any of those great brands worn off as a result of this tariff war?
More broadly, I mean, Canadians have a deep respect for Americans. And I mean, I think this year, if my memory is correct, this year is going to be another record year for Canadians visiting the United States. I do not think that the brands have suffered at all. There have been some sporadic campaigns here to buy Canadian, et cetera, but it hasn't stuck that much. I don't think any of the American brands have taken a hit. On the contrary, most Canadians see this as a political fight between both countries more than actual brands fighting each other. So I wouldn't say that any brands have been tarnished or hit in Canada as a result of this political fight.
I'm just curious, meeting with American companies all the time that want to do more business or start doing business in Canada, what's the biggest misconception that the American marketers have when they come into Canada the first time? What's the thing that makes you scratch your head?
Canada is not the United States. We are not the 51st state. It's important to keep that in mind. It's important to remember that a quarter of the population lives in Quebec. A huge proportion of the population is French speaking. Canada is a diverse country. It's not as necessarily a single market. Every province has its unique components. And you need to come in here with humility and the ability to adapt. And if you do that and you listen to people on the ground, Canadians are very friendly. It's the truth. We are. We're nice people. But we want to be heard. And if you just come in here with your big boots and you don't actually listen to what our culture and our perspective on issues are, you'll miss the point, and you'll make mistakes like other brands have done, notably Target, but other brands have made in the past, coming in here and thinking that we're just another 51st state of the United States.
Alex, thanks for joining us from Montreal and sharing your insights today. Alex's team in Montreal is just one of 110 offices around the world that are ready to share their insights on market strategy and communications across virtually every culture. In the coming days, we will tap into insights from our colleagues in the EU and the UK. We'll also be checking in with our offices in Hong Kong and mainland China to hear their thoughts on how to strategically survive the China-US trade war. The Rethinking Everything podcast is a production of Toonheim, which is solely responsible for the content. Our executive producer is Liz Sheets. Our digital director is Nick Marcouillet. Maddie Renicki produced today's segment, which was directed by Jonathan Dew. From the Toonheim studios in Minneapolis, I'm Pat Milan.